Are you ready, Alabama?
Shurmur picks it up on third down, fakes the throw, goes to the end zone, stretches, and he got it! Touchdown, Vanderbilt!
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Play action for Bryant. He's going to take it down. Field shot. McCloud is wide open, collects it, and they will not catch him. Just like that, the Tigers stretch the lead. 79 yards.
Call 866-485-9867 to get your bark on.
Third and one. Hit that ball on a hit well, and Mixon's going to walk in. Oh, what a night for Fitzgerald.
No time to get on the phone? Tweet the big dog at Tom Abraham Show.
Darnold in trouble. Darnold jump pass. Down at the 30.
Allinger with time. Allinger flushed out. Throws.
Touchdown, Texas. Foreman. Wow.
From the Tennessee Valley.
In trouble in the backfield. Wants to throw now. He's going to go deep. Touchdown, Florida!
Here he is, the head of the household.
A Hail Mary that's full of grace for the Gators.
The big dog.
Rams blitzing, Hurts gets it away in time. First down complete to Foster. Putting his legs to work. The turbo in, touchdown!
Tom Abraham. Now, it's Reaction Monday. In the doghouse.
Yeah, I just enjoyed watching the guys. I just enjoyed seeing them, their excitement, because I know how hard they've worked. I know what they've put into it. So for me, it was just seeing the people in the organization enjoying the moment.
And that was Jim McElwain talking about his team. He was very emotional afterwards. He was crying on the field afterwards. I mean, he was getting all choked up and everything afterwards, so he was emotional after his game, as he should be. It was such an emotional ending, and when you think about everything that those people have gone through in Florida with the hurricane and everything else, for all those Florida Gator fans, and they stretched that state tip to tip, okay? What a moment for them. I mean, we've been dwelling on, you know, Tennessee just being FUBAR throughout the game because that's just what they are. We just have to accept that now, that they're just FUBAR, okay? They're just screwing this thing up no matter what. Having said that, how about Florida getting it done, you know, and making a play? Because they still made a play. And who knows what this might mean for that team going forward. Big game, though, coming up. Huge game coming up Saturday for them in Kentucky. All right, that's a big one. The lines are out for the games coming up this week. And, you know, taking a first look at some of these lines, somewhat surprising to me. I forget UMass at Tennessee. Vols are 27-point favorites. That's not even a game. Arkansas and Texas A&M. Did you see the gear Arkansas is wearing in that game at Jerry's World for the game against the Aggies? They haven't beaten them. This is the albatross right here. This is the who's getting fired first game right now. Well, I take that back because I don't think Brett Bielema's seat is as hot as Kevin Sumlin's seat. But Kevin Sumlin is 4-0 against Brett Bielema in Arkansas. Okay, so if Arkansas beats Kevin Sumlin here, this takes some of the heat off of Brett Bielema. And you know, Kevin Sumlin may have to get an Uber to get back to College Station. Now, if A&M beats Arkansas and goes to 5-0 against Arkansas, well, then you really got to heat up Brett Bielema. I know a lot of people associated with Arkansas think that Brett Bielema is done a great job, but come on. I'll say this, though. Arkansas wins the uniform contest. Did you see the gear Arkansas? The only thing I don't like is the outline on the jerseys. To honor former Razorback Jerry Jones, who went into the Hall of Fame this past summer and who was a captain on Arkansas's last national championship team in 1960, Arkansas is not throwing back to 1960 gear. They're wearing Dallas Cowboy inspired gear. Did you see the gear, T-Mac?
I don't think so.
You're not on my Twitter? I thought you were on my Twitter.
Oh, the helmet?
Well, the helmet, click on that, you see the whole uniform.
Yeah,
the uniform is
I only got to the helmet. It was gorgeous.
Wait, it is gorgeous. I mean, it is. I'm a traditionalist, and I think Arkansas should be in their usual Arkansas red with the, you know, with the Razorback on there and the red jersey. And I don't, you know, I don't even like when they go red on red or any bastardizations of it. But I'll say this: if you told me that Arkansas was going to that, I'd be down with it. I'd be good with it. It's a good look. To honor Jerry Jones, they're wearing a Dallas Cowboys themed uniform, complete with the silver breeches. Same kind of striping on the side, but only using the red and white. The silver helmet with the red and white striping on the top of the helmet and the Razorback on it. I mean, it's going to look good. They're getting 3 points against the Aggies there. That might be a live bet. I mean, the Aggies, everything in their power to win again last week. I mean, it, you know, they went off in the second half, but goodness gracious almighty. This is Louisiana Monroe. No, wait a minute. Louisiana Lafayette. That's what we used to call them in the Sun Belt. Not Louisiana Monroe. Louisiana Lafayette. ULL. Louisiana. Just call us Louisiana now. Don't call us ULL. They sent out a press release. Do not refer to us as ULL. Do not refer to us as Louisiana Lafayette. We are Louisiana. I'm like, all right, Louisiana Lafayette. In any event, Aggies are a 3-point favorite over Arkansas. Louisiana Tech is at South Carolina, and the Gamecocks are only a 10.5-point favorite over the Texters. Is that what they are? What are they? Are they the Texters or the Bulldogs? What's Louisiana Tech, T-Mac? Are they the Bulldogs or the Texters?
I'm pretty sure they're just the Bulldogs.
Are they the Bulldogs? Because the chicks used to be the Lady Texters.
The Lady
remember when
Texters.
Louisiana... Oh, you're too young to remember. Louisiana Tech women... It used to be the Louisiana Tech women basketball team and Tennessee's basketball team, women's basketball team, the Lady Vols. Are they still the Lady Vols? Did they have that press conference? Did they change the Lady Vols? Did they drop Lady from Vols? Are they just Vols now?
I saw something about it on Twitter. I really wasn't following it. It was a long weekend, man. I was dazed.
Long weekend. I was recovering from surgery. At least you should know if they're still the Lady Vols or not.
I'll get back on Twitter and look. I've been, like I said, I've been busy all weekend. I haven't had a day off since last week. So
they should be called the Pat Summits.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a time when they were the only two teams in college basketball, women's college basketball, that could win a national championship. It seemed like it was always Tennessee and Louisiana Tech. Now there's like as many as maybe, I don't know, four teams in women's college basketball that are any good. But it used to be like only two. I thought they were called the Lady Texters back then. But anyway, I digress. The Tide are a 19-point favorite over Vandy. That just seems gross. Is that right? Should they be a 19-point favorite? They opened 19.5. It's at 19, 18.5, 19. I mean, Vandy's given up. What's Vandy given up? 13 points this season? They've given up 13 points. One touchdown.
After that fruity little comment that Vanderbilt defensive end made, I could easily see it breaking 19 points.
When you come to our house, we show you how to play some SEC ball. It don't matter where you're from. You're going to know what ball we play. Alabama, you're next.
You know, because I saw it and didn't listen to it at first, but I saw it, I didn't realize how effeminate that dude sounded.
It's pretty bad.
I really didn't realize that. It's I was pretty weak. that is pretty weak. I don't know. Let's see if I can find the guy, what his name is. No, he's their starting defensive tackle. He's not some scrub. I mean, he's a guy that had a big game. The starting defensive tackle there.
So
that's Nifal Lialo.
Sure. Lialo. Yeah, sure. That guy.
That's that guy. Nifal Lialo that said that.
When you come to our house, we show you how to play some SEC ball. It don't matter where you're from. You're going to know what ball we play. Alabama, you're next.
And we're going to put doilies out for you and cookies and milk. So when you come to our house. Yeah. Sounds kind of
so, so what's softer, his voice or Tennessee's defense? It's close.
Oh, man.
It's close.
It's definitely up in the air. It's just so bad. Anyway, I wonder which one of Vanderbilt's 15 uniforms they're going to wear for this game. Every single game, Vandy wears a different uniform. Are they going to put Alabama into crimson again? Last time Alabama was down there, they wore their crimson. I mean, it might as well. It's going to be a home game for Alabama anyway. But 19? I mean, doesn't that seem gross?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I can see it getting there, though. But yeah, I guess it's a lot because and I guess they're really not respecting what Vanderbilt's been able to do so far, it feels, because regardless of that comment, what they've done is really worth some respect. It's been really cool. Them beating K-State, winning a 14-7 game against K-State was really, really cool to see.
They just kind of offense, I don't think. I don't think they can do much against Alabama. Alabama's defense is not what it was last year, but it's good enough to kind of smother Vandy, I would think. Mississippi State gets 7 at Georgia. That's a live number too, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can see Mississippi State winning that game, but I don't know if they're going to win it by more than a touchdown.
No, Mississippi State gets 7.
I'm sorry. See, I told you I'm still exhausted. Then I definitely like Mississippi State in that game because I can see
they're
them winning.
Getting 7, yeah.
I can see them winning straight up.
Shouldn't it be like a 3-point game?
Yeah.
State gets 7. Yeah. Let me tell you something else. The Gators are getting 3.5 at Kentucky. I'm going to go right now. I'm going Lee Sterling on you. The wrong team is favored. I don't think I think that should be a pick 'em.
Yeah.
At best. There's some weird lines here. And finally, Auburn is giving 18 points to Missouri at Missouri. Now, Missouri's got some offense. Now, they don't have any defense. But
yeah, and we saw some nice strides by Auburn's offense this weekend, but they have ball security problems. They've had turnovers in all three games. We want that to be an anomaly, and we want that to be early season jitters or whatever. But that's becoming a trend right now. So I get what you're saying there. I mean, I know Auburn would be a sexy pick in that game, but who's to say they're not going to turn the ball over?
Missouri. I mean, they just got whacked by Purdue. See, the thing is, Missouri, what they had going for them was they had this great offense, but they had no defense. So they fired the defensive coordinator, and then they scored 3 against Purdue.
I know you have the whole circling around the drain in your pick, your top 10. Yeah. After the top 10, you have circling around the drain.
Yeah.
The very, very bottom of that drain has to be Missouri.
Oh, yeah, it's Missouri.
Has to be.
They're terrible. They're just absolutely terrible. Now, Purdue's playing better football. But Missouri totally embarrassed the league with that loss.
Yeah.
That's a terrible kind of loss. It's embarrassing on every level. And, maybe Auburn. I just would be real, real careful with that. Grumpy says that Missouri's offense sucks. Does their offense suck? I mean, they didn't suck before. Now, they weren't playing big-time talent. They didn't suck against South Carolina, did they? They weren't terrible in that game. Sure, we're bad against it. 18 points seems like a lot. I don't like giving 18 points. I'll tell you what, both of those games will be in Beat the Big Dog in the Friday trifecta. Missouri only scored 13 against South Carolina. Man, you know what? Maybe they do suck. He's probably right. They scored 72 points against Missouri State and have scored 16 points since then. And they don't have any defense. And if Auburn doesn't turn the ball over, Auburn should score 35 points. They should score what Purdue scored. I'll tell you what. I like Auburn minus 18 more than I like Alabama minus 19 at Vandy.
Wow, I'm the exact opposite. I feel pretty confident that Alabama will win by more than 18 points. I don't know why. It's just an instinctual feeling.
Vandy's a hard team, man. I just think they're a hard-nosed, tough-ass team. I think, you know, look, if Alabama – I think Alabama could win that game 24-10 and feel very good about it. You know, 27-10 doesn't cover. Alabama wins 27-10. They don't. Alabama wins that game, you know, something 24-3. They barely cover.
I think Vandy's lucky to get a field goal in this game. I don't think they score a touchdown unless they turn Alabama over. They're not scoring a touchdown.
Could be. And Alabama will have some linebackers. But they'll be fascinating picks. Look, Vegas usually isn't off by much. You know, they're not usually off by too much. 866-485-9867 will get you in. Talking head after talking head, tell me Missouri's offense is gray. Haven't seen it yet. No, it's great. Haven't seen it yet. No, a lot of people said that because they had 72 points in the first game, but they've only had 16 points since. And the 72 points came against an FCS team. Because, look, when you're playing an FCS team, I mean, clearly you should be able to name your score, right? Right? Well, shouldn't you? I guess if you don't turn a ball over five times, you wouldn't have to. McCringleberry says, it's a money line, Tom, not a prediction, Vandy. The hell are you talking about, McCringleberry? I don't know what McCringleberry's talking about. It's a money line, not a prediction. I don't know what the money line is for Vandy. Let me see. The money line for Vandy. I haven't seen a money line yet. The line is 18.5 right now. It's sitting at 18.5. What, Wolverine Dan is double dipping? Okay. Wolverine Dan in the 5 o'clock hour, what do you got?
Hey, man, I watched that old Miss Cal game. Did you watch that game?
Yeah, it's grumpy. I did. I watched the second half. I was all ready to talk about what a good win that was for the SEC and for Ole Miss and how this puts Ole Miss back in the conversation, and then they crapped the bed in the second half.
Yeah, I hope Wolverine Dan can take a joke, but he's, you go to Wolverine Dan quicker than anybody, man. But you know, Ole Miss had, I don't think they had any business losing that game. They had a couple of turnovers, but Ole Miss, this is why I called. I had no idea Ole Miss had that many wide receivers that are awesome. They scare me, and they still have a pretty decent defense. I think Auburn is going to have a very long year this year.
I Mississippi State should scare you a hell of a lot more than Ole Miss right now.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Look, they're good looking.
Sure good enough for Ole Miss.
Well, they're good looking guys. I mean, you know. But are they? I mean, they got an awesome quarterback, so you would think that they're going to have a lot of great offense there. I mean, you know, Van Jefferson, you know, he caught 10 balls. DeMarcus Lodge is a beast. He caught 4 balls for, you know, 100 yards.
Both of those, but yeah,
Metcalf caught 3 balls. They got some nice receivers. They got some nice offense. They got. Some, I don't know why they only. I don't know what happened in the second half, though, why they couldn't score in the second half.
I watched so many games this weekend. I DVR them and watch them all. Mm-hmm. And Ole Miss had a couple of deflections off of receivers' hands that went up in the air. I want to say they had, I know they had 2. I think they had 3 in the second half, and it just shut them down. I'm just saying, as an Auburn fan, I don't like what I'm seeing right now, and. Yeah, Mississippi State is gonna crush us, man. I can see it coming. They're gonna crush us. Georgia is probably gonna crush us. Ole Miss may beat us. Alabama will crush us. If what I'm seeing is what we got. Petway doesn't seem like he's fast enough to hit an open hole. And Kerryon Johnson, when he does come back, he's not big enough to mow anybody over. So it's like,
where is Cam Martin? Why is Petway carried the ball 55 times in the last 2 weeks? And Cam Martin, who is not injured, who had 133 yards against Georgia Southern, does not have a carry. Why is this kid completely gone? Because he's got a little wiggle, and he's a little more like Kerryon Johnson than he is than Pam Petway. And look, Petway is Petway, but Petway is more effective when you're also threatening the corners. Now they've got nobody threatening the perimeter, so they're loading up for Petway. You know, you need that. You need a Kerryon Johnson to threaten the D gap so that you can come back inside and have a little inside outside. They got no outside now. It's just all Petway up the middle. And then Jared Stidham getting sacked.
And I thought that I thought we had a bunch of receivers coming in the last class or two.
There's some good looking receivers.
The guy on the team is 5'8" or 5'9", and when he's out there running routes, sure he's white lightning, but at 5 foot whatever he is, he's not the receiver I want running a go route.
Yeah.
Because the D-backs have got 30 yards. They're lining up 30 yards further from you. If you're faster, they'll just line up a little deeper. They can compensate for that. You know what I mean?
Except for the Tennessee defensive backs. They're not going to line up deep. Even if it's the last play of the game, they're not going to let you. They're going to line up at 15 yards, and then they're going to let you run right past them. That's what they're going to do, Tennessee.
You know, I'm a big Gus guy, man, but he's starting to – I mean, after watching what happened this weekend – and the weekend before, I'm starting to lose my Gus thing, man.
Yeah. Well, what's the number though? What if it's 8-4? I mean, if it's 8-4, do you just keep on keeping on? If it's 4-4 in the league and it's 8-4 overall, or you know,
the answer is what you think it is. It depends on which four. You know,
if they lose,
we're not going to win the national championship. I know that.
I got them at 9-3. I had them at 9-3, and they're right where I thought they would be. I thought they'd lose to Clemson. I didn't think it would be ugly the way it was against Mercer, but they did at 510 yards. I got them losing at LSU, but now I don't know about LSU. I got to see something more. That's why it takes 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know if LSU's a paper tiger or what. And then I had them losing against Alabama. But if they are now, the Mississippi State game looks like a bear. The Georgia game looks tougher, but at Texas A&M, I had them winning there. I had them winning both the Mississippi schools. I think there's still going to be 8 or 9 wins. You know
if you look at it, this tells me a lot. When you look at the Auburn-Georgia series, when I was growing up, it was tit for tat the whole time.
Right.
But if you look, that one tip pass that we had in like 2013 to beat Georgia in Jordan-Hare.
Right.
If you take that loss away, that tip away, I think it's been how many years? I mean, a long time since we've beaten Georgia.
I don't know. There was a bunch of years in there where the road team kept winning. They were going back and forth with the road team winning that, but I don't know if it was a bunch of years.
That was years ago, though. We're getting old, dude. That was years ago. Georgia owned us other than that tipped pass.
Really? I'll have to go back and look at it. I'll look at my Auburn media guide and see what it says about that with that Georgia thing. But the I mean, that year, now you go back now and you look at that year, 2013, when Gus went to the national championship, and he's living off of that. There's no question about it, plus being the offensive coordinator when they won a national championship. But that year, remember, you need a touchdown pass at the end of the game to beat Mississippi State with 14 seconds to go. You get the prayer at Jordan-Hare and the kick six. You know, if you don't get a couple of breaks that year and they are 9-3 that year, I don't know that Gus is still there. You know, I think he's getting a lot of mileage off of 1 year, because since then, it's really not been much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Anyway,
it is what it is, man. I just don't like where we're sitting right now with this offense. I don't know, man. All right, man. I appreciate it.
All right.
But I'm sold on Ole Miss's receivers. I think they're the best in the country. Later.
Yeah, I got that text over the weekend. So I don't know that they're the best in the country, though. I'm not going to go there, but there's some pretty good sets of receivers around the country. But I haven't been able to see much of them. I only saw the second half when they weren't good. I didn't see the first half when they were rolling in that game.
Well,
so.
I think they had two different guys catch a 70-yarder or longer pass.
Oh yeah, they were beasts. And by the way, thanks for the call, Grumpy. It's a good job of you. By the way, T-Mac, you can verify this, okay? Verify this. Wolverine Dan calls the show before I go on the air, okay? Sometime before 2 o'clock, he calls the show. And he is on hold when the music starts the show, and I never go to him before 2:20, 2:21 sometimes, because I always go to him, let me go to Wolverine Dan, get him out of here before we, you know, go to the break. Wolverine Dan sits on hold probably 20 to 25 minutes at the beginning of every show to be the first caller on the show. So, Grumpy, I'm just saying, I don't go to Wolverine Dan. Oh, look, Wolverine Dan called, and I go to him. Am I? Stop me if I'm lying there, T-Mac.
No, that is a 100% fact. He calls 4 or 5 minutes before the show starts, and then, you know, like you said, you don't get to him until 2022 after. So he sits for almost 30 minutes.
Yeah, but he doesn't have as important a job as does Grumpy. I mean, Grumpy's a contractor, and you know, Wolverine Dan's a mailman. So maybe that's it. Grumpy doesn't have the time to sit on hold that Wolverine Dan has. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, we'll rewind it, and I will check that series. I'm looking for it right now. I'm going to check that series against, against Georgia, see if that's really the case. We'll be back, 7:30, 103.9 AM. I did the research. 2-9 Auburn against Georgia in the last 11 years. 2-9. That one slipped by me. I realized it had gotten like that. Could be trouble. Also, from the text window, what are the chances UT cans Butch early this season? The point of critical mass, I think, is October 21, October 28. The last two games of October. If they go to Alabama and get destroyed, I mean, if they go to Alabama and get beat by 30, totally possible. But let's say they go to Alabama and get beat by 30. Then it's an inferno. I don't care what happens. I don't know, even if they beat Georgia. But let's say they go to Alabama. Let's say they beat Georgia and beat South Carolina at home and get throttled by Alabama. Then the game at Kentucky means everything. Because then at Kentucky, I mean, Kentucky, you never lose to Kentucky. So then it becomes, if you get throttled at Alabama and lose to Kentucky, they'll announce that Butch Jones won't be returning next year. They'll play out the string. He might be there, they'll give it to somebody else, whatever. Southern Miss, Missouri, LSU, and Vandy. But they'll announce after the Kentucky loss that Butch Jones will not be back next year. That answers that question. If that were to happen that way, if my scenario were to happen. All right. On the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline today, Tom Lugenbill, Damon Amendolara, Cole Kublik, Teresa Walker. This is your Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. USC actually dropped a spot below Penn State now in the rankings, you know, which are of course obviously meaningless, but they do kind of give us a little bit of a gauge of how people are thinking. The top four teams coming from one each from the SEC, ACC, Big 12, and Big 10. Is USC just ripe for the picking, or was this just a classic coming off of the Stanford game? Or, you know, you don't think that they would take Texas lightly here. I don't know what to think of USC.
Well, I've got them this week. That's my broadcast. I got SC Cal at Cal, and we're going to find out a lot more. Cal's okay. I don't know if they're as good as their record, but they haven't made a lot of mistakes, and it's why they're 3-0. You know, with SC, I don't think Stanford's as good as we all thought. We're finding that out. Texas is better than we've given them credit for in the last 2 weeks, and certainly proved that on Saturday. And the issue with SC is, Are they going to play somebody that can take advantage? Because they don't play Washington in the regular season. Who can knock them off if they make a couple of errors? Because right now, the U of A's and the ASU's, they're not good enough. They've already taken care of Stanford. And so you sit there and you look at Sam Darnold and you say, boy, he's kind of turned the ball over. He's taking some risks with the football. But is anybody good enough to actually beat them and exploit them? Is he still so good that he can mask some of the other deficiencies and even weather the storm of a turnover or two? And, you know, we'll find out because they got to go on the road to Cal this week. I don't think it's a good matchup for Cal, but one thing Cal has done is they've protected the football. They haven't had self-inflicted wounds. So I still think it's too early to tell for SC just how good they really are.
Yeah, and then across town from them, just a horrific result for UCLA, regardless of Josh Rosen throwing for, you know, a million yards again, whatever, almost 500 yards or whatever. But Jim Mora's got to be in trouble now at this point in time. I mean, my gosh, you can't go to Memphis and lose that football game when you have what you have talent-wise right now on that team.
But when you consider how they looked on defense against Texas A&M, it's not all that surprising that Memphis did what they did to them. I mean, Memphis can score points. They did it all last year under Mike Norvell in his first year there. That one didn't surprise me so much just because UCLA made more errors on offense. They turned the ball over, and UCLA is abysmal on defense. If anything, Jim Moore is in trouble because of their defense, and right. He's a defensive guy more than anything else.
Right. Tom Luganville with us, ESPN sideline analyst and, of course, recruiting guru as well. Clemson, man. I mean, if Clemson had opened the season at number one, and they would still be number one, clearly. I mean, it just, you know, they're number two to Alabama, and that was just the way it started. But, boy, you could make an argument for Clemson right now being the best team in the country. They seem to have it going on all cylinders. And for them to do to Lamar Jackson again what they did to that kid and the way their quarterback is playing, Kelly Bryant, we got to give a lot to Dabo Sweeney, and we got to say this Clemson thing ain't going anywhere.
Not going anywhere. We talked about that too, Tom, I believe, before the season started. I mean, aren't we past, you know, seeming to believe that Clemson has to rebuild? No, they don't. They're so deep. That roster top to bottom is outstanding. I felt coming into the season they were going to be even better on defense, and they are, and it does look like they've got a gamer at quarterback in Kelly Bryant. And so for my vote right now, they're the number one team in the country. I'd have Alabama at number two. I just think that right now they're more complete, they're more consistent. And listen, they beat that Louisville team two ways now. They beat them at home when they turned the ball over five times and had to win a close game, even though Louisville had 100 plays of offense. Louisville still couldn't beat them. And they go into Louisville and absolutely dominate them without Deshaun Watson. So the two ways they've been able to do that and handle Lamar Jackson has been impressive.
Damon Amendolara with us here, talking a little college football to get things started off and getting into some NFL football as well. And now week two is in the hopper, and, you know, everybody in New England can breathe a sigh of relief as the Patriots came back with a vengeance the way they played against New Orleans. And you like to feel like Kansas City, like in my rankings, I had moved Kansas City to the – well, I actually had Green Bay at the top of the heap. They'll fall. Kansas City I had number two. But – The thing with Kansas City is it's just so hard to buy into an Andy Reid team long-term, isn't it? I mean, don't you get the feeling that they're like the Texas A&M of the NFL? You know, they're going to get out to a 9-0 start or 8-1 or something like that, and then something will happen late, and then they'll get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. It's just so hard to get excited about Andy Reid teams for the long haul.
Yes, it is, and I talked about it on my show earlier today the same way, is that they are probably right now, if they're not the best team in the NFL, they have the best resume in the NFL with those two wins, and they obviously look very dangerous. But they've gone 11-5 two out of the last 4 years. They've gone 13-3, or 12-4 rather, last year. Andy Reid has not been worse than 9-7 in Kansas City in his 4 years at the helm. He has been absolutely fantastic since he got to KC. But they can't get past the divisional round of the playoffs. So does this feel different? Well, it feels a little different because Alex Smith has actually taken shots downfield. But when you lose a guy like Eric Berry, that's a big blow to the defense. And this is a team that could be 12-4 and a two seed like they were last year, and it would be hard to really totally buy in that they would be able to do damage in the playoffs. So unfortunately, they made their own bed. It's a team that's been great in the regular season, but iffy in the postseason. And I don't know how you kind of overcome that until you start doing it in the postseason.
No, you just have to do it. And that's why, you know, you look at teams that build their way to the postseason. And as we talked about the Patriots last week, there have been other years where they struggled to get out of the chute. And then they're rolling the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season and into the playoff. And that's how you win, you know, the Super Bowl. It just seems to be that way. Now, having said that, there are some other teams that seem to be, you know, Atlanta seems to be a pretty good football team. And I know Green Bay has struggled in that building before, well, not in that building, but in that city before. But, you know, Atlanta, Oakland seems to be like the real deal. There are a few teams, Denver, you know, maybe Trevor Siemian is a quarterback. You know what I mean? They you know, they just thrashed the Cowboys. So you start to kind of put together a little bit of a narrative here.
I really like Trevor Siemian. I think that that Broncos team was vastly underrated coming into the season. I think it was a little unfair because last year Trevor Siemian played pretty well in the first 3 months of the season, then got dinged up, and then the Broncos didn't finish well. But I think it was a little unfair not to consider them as real legit Super Bowl contenders coming into the season because people just didn't know Trevor Siemian enough. And I think because he's not flashy or wasn't a high draft pick, people assumed that he wasn't good enough. Well, he was pretty good last year, and now this year he's been excellent. And you still have to remember that defense is so good, and they have three very, very good skill position weapons on the offense with Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and C.J. Anderson. I think they were so underrated coming into the season. I had them at number 6 in my overall power poll of the NFL going into the season, and they look really good, and I just had a feeling you would see, and I liked what I saw from Siemian in the preseason. I just thought that you would see a better Broncos team than people gave them credit for, and I think we're seeing that now. They've got to make sure that offensive line holds together because this injury on the offensive line, their draft pick, is a big one, but in the AFC, I really think the Broncos have the guts to rattle some cages and be one of the best teams of the AFC all year.
Yeah, I mean, John Kelly ran the ball against that team for 141 yards on just 19 carries. I mean, yeah, that's a smooth 7.4 yards per carry. I mean, as a team, they were around 6 yards a carry. If you take the sacks off, they were around 6 yards a carry, Tennessee, against Florida. You just don't usually see those kind of numbers against Florida. So to that point, just your thought on Tennessee-Florida, let me say it again. John Kelly averaged 7.4 yards per carry. You got first and goal, 2 feet from the end zone. How is it that you don't have all the big uglies put their hand in the dirt and you don't just jack it in there, put the quarterback under center 3 times if you have to? You probably don't have to, but 3 times if you have to, so you don't have all these other things going on that could lead to guys jumping or interference or this or that or whatever other kind of problems, and then eventually an interception. How is it that you just don't line up and pound that ball in? What is the thought process there?
There isn't one. You're not thinking. I mean, it's complete and utter disrespect to your offensive line and your tailback. I mean, I'm going behind right guard 4 consecutive plays there because I think he's the best offensive lineman they have. So I know he's a true freshman. I know he's young, but he's the only guy who's moving people around. I try to find an ace block, a combo with the center and right guard. We can get a little bit of movement, and I'm sitting John Kelly right behind those guys 4 consecutive plays. To not do it one play out of 4, it's inexcusable.
Yeah, and Kelly runs like his hair's on fire. You know what I mean? Even if you just give him a little seam, he will fight and battle and squeeze and somehow get in there. It's mind-boggling. And then, I mean, there were multiple things that they do in that game. It felt like that they should have been winning that game by 10 points at least. And then at the end, you know, to say, well, you know, we were out of defensive backs, you know, so you can't play deeper than the deepest? I mean, really? You're out of defensive backs, so you get beat 20 yards into a route on the last play of the game? The guy's running by your guy? I don't know, man. I don't know how Butch Jones could possibly save this thing. I mean, this is 5 years of undercoaching some really good talent. I just don't see how – I don't know how you can survive this.
Oh, he'll survive this. It's going to be dependent on what happens moving forward.
I mean, at the end of the season, you know.
He still has what I believe to be a pretty good South Carolina team. Vanderbilt's an undefeated team. They got to play them. They got to play a team in LSU that's got more talent than they do. They got to play the number one team in the nation in Alabama. They got to play Kentucky, who's undefeated right now. So all of a sudden, we knew. I mean, the reason that I picked Tennessee to finish 4th in the East was because of the schedule, and the schedule looks more difficult than it did going into the season right now, based on the way they've played also. So he'll be fine now, but it's going to be dependent on what happens the rest of the way, and that stretch looks daunting.
No question about it. Cole Kublik with us, sideline analyst for the SEC Network. This one, Monday's our sideline analyst day. Tom Luganville and Cole Kublik every Monday. That gets it. It doesn't really get any better than that. If CBS had it to do over again, and I know that they've got to get everybody in over some period of time and so on, so that's probably why they're going to Nashville. Not that Vanderbilt isn't impressive what they did defensively. They actually called that one, but I thought that was very impressive what they did to a K-State team that was averaging 55 points a game coming in there. But if you had to do it over again, I mean, Georgia-Mississippi State looks really salty right now, doesn't it? I mean, we want to know about Georgia. Is this real? Is there a team that's head and shoulders above the rest of the East? And State coming off a 30-point beatdown of LSU. It's almost like they need this game now to verify what we just saw in the last game, you know, that type of thing. This one ought to be a great game.
I agree, and I mean, Grantham's got a little bit of revenge that he's going to want to get on Athens, and that may play into it emotionally some, but I kind of disagree. I think CBS got it right.
Really?
Because when are you going to get Vanderbilt meaning as much as they do right now? I mean, they've given up 13 points all season. Kyle Shurmur he's the number one passer efficiency-wise in the SEC. There are a lot of bragging points about Vanderbilt right now. I mean, coming off of an AP top 20 win, you're not going to be able to say these things and sell this team, I don't think, the way you are now, maybe not at any other point in the season. If you get them after Alabama, they might be a totally different team. Now, am I saying that I think Vanderbilt truly competes for four quarters with Alabama? Probably not. There are some things I think they can do to cause problems. But, listen, that Georgia-Mississippi State game is going to be great. I get it. I'm not buying Georgia yet because I think the Notre Dame win is a perception win, just like the USC win over Texas is a perception win. We're all celebrating those wins like they're these monumental, gigantic college football wins and program-changing wins, and they're just not. So I do think that Mississippi State-Georgia is good, and I think it's going to be a great game. But I think right now, if you're going to take Vanderbilt at some point in time, Alabama's always going to rate, no matter what. They're going to bring that number.
Yeah.
And I think now's the time to go get Vanderbilt because you can potentially sell that this is going to be a very competitive game.
Yeah, well, he's the starter, but instead of it being 23-7, it may be more like, you know, 18-12, you know, that type of thing, or 18-13, you know, when they're both in there. And if they really are, and they know, I mean, I say if they're smart, of course they're smart. They ought to use the formula that Alabama has used in the past, not only with him but with other big backs like that. Whereas DeMarco Murray early and Derrick Henry late, he's the kind of guy that will in the fourth quarter just can take over a football game. And that's the thing that's really exciting, because in the NFL, if you could turn a 2-minute offense into a 4-minute offense or into a 6-minute offense where you can just lock a game up, it's like in baseball, having a great, you know, 7th and 8th inning guy to hand it off to your closer. It just shortens the football game. That's what Derrick Henry does. He shortens the football game.
Well, absolutely. I mean, why are the Oakland Raiders so happy to get Marshawn Lynch on the field for them to close out games? And when you're running the ball in the third and fourth quarter, you know, you're playing keep away and you're pounding a defense and you're just taking away their will to line up and take that hit on the next play. And, you know, Derrick Henry, he's a load to take on. And at a certain point, particularly yesterday when it felt like, you know, 97 degrees on the field, you just get tired of dealing with somebody like that.
And for him, that's his neck of the woods. I mean, he grew up sucking on that humidity, so that doesn't seem to bother him as much. They also seem to be very comfortable using Marcus Mariota in the running game, in the read looks. I love this speed option look with Tywan Taylor. He had another, 17-yard run on that thing as well, and it gives it a whole nother look. I mean, because not only do you have to take care of the inside part of the defense, you also have to take care of the perimeter then, because it seems like that thing could go. So they've got a nice little inside-outside type thing going, and if they want to get the ball in Taylor's hand, and he is the, you know, the speed back, if you will, you know, that makes a lot of sense to use a guy that way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they showed it a lot in the preseason, and, you know, there was a couple plays, at least one that I remember, where, you know, Tywan Taylor, they had him in motion crossing Mariota about the time that he could have taken the handoff. So, you know, they're using that with some nice deception there to get defenses watching that kid. So, you know, they use an awful lot of motion in this offense, and, you know, he definitely gives them another aspect when they use it and when they don't.
This wasn't the most efficient game for Marcus Mariota passing. He was just 15 of 27. He has 78.5 passer rating, so it was down a little bit from where they are normally. But like you said, that's a pretty active front that that Jacksonville has. What would be any of the other reasons that might have hurt his passing a little bit?
Well, let's not forget, Corey Davis, you know, didn't play a ton in that game because of the hamstring. Davis mm-hmm. only had I'm looking at the stats right now. He was thrown three times, had one. Yeah. You know, but I think you have to give Jacksonville some credit. You know, they are very fast. They had 10 sacks a week ago. And, you know, they did get to him once, but only once. And it was very eerily similar to the sack that, you know, broke his leg last year, getting caught around the ankles. And, you know, he managed to pop right up and you know, no problems of whatsoever. You know, one of those things, you haven't had a ton of time in the preseason or in games with guys like Corey Davis, Eric Decker. You know, it just feels like that's, you know, that they're still trying to click there, Tom. And, you know, let's face it, the one thing this team does very, very well is run the ball. And they have a lot of young people. Jonathan Smith's a rookie. Taywan Taylor's a rookie. So, you know, there's just some moving pieces there, so to speak, about trying to get comfortable.
So there you have it. That is your Rapid Rewind for this, the 18th of September, 2017. We'll come back and wrap it up next right here at 730-1039. The Ump. Let's get a final look at the news of the day with T-Mac. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
I'm going to start with a little NFL injury update. The 2016 sack leader for the Falcons, Vic Beasley, will miss a month due to a hamstring injury suffered in a Sunday night victory over the Packers. Carolina Panthers tight end Greg Olsen is out 6 to 8 weeks after having surgery on a broken foot. Browns wide receiver Corey Coleman has confirmed today that he has broken his right hand on Sunday and will undergo surgery. This is the same hand he broke last season during practice, week two, I believe, that caused him to miss 6 games. Andrew Luck will miss week 3 against the Browns with his shoulder injury. Packers wide receiver Randall Cobb is day-to-day after MRI reveals no major damage to shoulder, as well as Jordy Nelson with a quad injury being day-to-day. And Odell Beckham Jr. will be a game-time decision for Monday Night Football with an ankle injury coming up here just shortly. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
All right, got a big show coming up tomorrow. Yeah, T-Mac, I got to tell you, it's going to take some – I mean, already the NFL has got me flummoxed. But it's going to take some time, too, to kind of sort out where we're at with the SEC right now when I put together our top tens.
Yeah.
The SEC top 10 is not – you just. I think the top 3 or 4 will come pretty easily. Is that gap? It's going to be hard. And in the NFL, how high do you move the Patriots up? How far do you drop the Packers? There's a lot to that. Who's the best team in the NFL right now? Raiders? Falcons?
Falcons or Raiders, probably.
Chiefs? They went to New England, whacked them, beat Philadelphia. Denver? No, but what do I do with Denver? I didn't even have him in the top 10. That's going to do it for us today. Antonio McBeth mixed the show. I'm Tom Abraham. It's the Tide Rewind next, followed by Monday Night Football right here on your football station. 730-1039, the Ump.